One for Kucherov. High slot. Holds. Shoots. Score! Kucherov!
What a face-off win.
What a shot by Kucherov, too. It's 4-1 Lightning.
That's Lightning winger Nikita Kucherov, scoring his second goal of the night in Tampa Bay's 5-1 win over Montreal in Monday's Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. While the Canadiens' offense was lacking, they'll look to their world-class netminder Carey Price to bail them out in the rest of the series. And Price's old teammate, PK Subban, joins the show to tell us how the Habs can bounce back. Or is it Rebondé? I'm Sarah Spain, in for Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, June 30th. This is ESPN Daily. PK Subban, the last time I was talking to you, I was getting rejected at a club in Hollywood because I had changed out of my heels into flip-flops after the ESPYs. And were it not for you arriving to save me and essentially tell them, let her in, who knows how I would have spent the rest of that night. Certainly more sober, I would imagine. Nice to see you again.
It's nice to see you as well, and I'm happy I could do that for you.
PK Subban is a defenseman for the New Jersey Devils. He's a three-time NHL All-Star, a Norris Trophy winner for best NHL defensive player in 2013, and lucky for us, an NHL playoff analyst for ESPN. We got Game 2 tonight in the Stanley Cup Final between the Tampa Bay Lightning and Montreal Canadiens, a team I think it's fair to say you know pretty well. But before we get to the rest of the series, I want to look back at Game 1, played in Tampa, a one-goal game after two periods, and then the Lightning piled it on in the third to grab the win 5-1. Let's start with what you saw from Tampa Bay in this Game 1.
Yeah, you know, I think what was most impressive about Tampa Bay was their ability to stick to their game plan. You know, as a team that's coming off of winning a Stanley Cup, obviously a long playoff run now, you know, did they think that they'd be playing the Montreal Canadiens in the Stanley Cup final? I'm not sure, but you know, I think that as far as all the other teams and the competition throughout the season, whether it's the Colorado Avalanche, Vegas, the Islanders, these teams that maybe a lot of people were expecting to be in the finals, for them not to be there, you expect maybe they come down a level. Maybe they don't play to the level of competition that they're used to. And I just felt that, you know, they were pretty consistent throughout the whole game, from their goaltending to their defense, the way they move puck, pucks out of the zone. They play with pace. I thought that as the game went on, their battle level continued to get higher and higher. And you could see that in the second period. They just really separated themselves from the other team on the ice by the way they won puck battles, their sustained offensive zone pressure. You could just see it's a little bit demoralizing when you play against a team in the Stanley Cup final. And in the first game, you're spending most of the time in your own zone. So I thought Tampa had a really good game. Montreal probably had the start that they wanted, you know, to come out. I know Tampa was up 1-0, but, you know, when they went up 2-0 to cut the lead to 2-1 coming into the third period, they were in a good position against a really good team. They just didn't get any bounces and any puck luck, and they had their chances too.
Let's look at the series as a whole. The goaltending on display, absolutely world-class.
Going up Cirelli, can he hold this in for Hedman? Yes, right, so go Stamkos, open, shoot, save, Price with a glove.
We got to talk about Carey Price, your old Montreal teammate. He let in 5 goals in Game 1, but he's been pretty stellar in this postseason. What have you seen from Price so far in the postseason and in Game 1?
Well, I think that he's going to be tested in this series a lot. And, you know, not to take anything away from him, I think he's had a remarkable playoffs and he's one of the best, if not the best goaltender in the league. But, you know, Tampa's got some of the best players in the league. And, you know, they've seen Carey Price playing in the Eastern Conference. I remember when I was playing in Montreal, a lot of the players that are there now and Stamkos, Kucherov, Braden Point was kind of came in a little bit later, but Johnson, Killorn, Hedman, all these guys know Pricey. So they played against them. I think that, you know, with Tampa, where he's going to have a huge challenge is their ability to move pucks east-west. And they go a lot east-west, and it's very, very difficult. You could see it with Kucherov walking off the wall, going east-west, quick wrister. You know, and then the point shots. If Tampa keeps sustaining offensive zone pressure and cycling the puck and getting pucks through, it's going to be a tough series for Carey and Montreal.
So those five goals that Carey Price let up in game one, a bit of a blip, the most he's allowed this postseason. On the other side, no blip for Andre Vasilevsky, Tampa Bay's goaltender. He's been incredible.
Byron the other way, right side Anderson across the blue line, right circle shot. Save Vasilevsky, and he holds on with the glove.
Price and Vasilevsky are the only two winners of the best goalie vote since the NHL Players Association began publishing its player polls in 2017-18. What makes Vasilevsky so tough?
Well, listen, he's young. Obviously, he's younger than Carey, but I think that they have similar styles. You know, they have an ability to block as a goalie. They're so big. They take up a lot of the net, but they also have the ability to make the second and third save. So as a shooter, you know that when you're shooting the puck, I think it was the second goal, you could see Blake Coleman kind of walked into the middle, shot it, wasn't picking a corner, and it happened to sneak through Carey's arm.
Across the Montreal line, high slot. Shoots, block, rebound. Coleman, score! Blake Coleman!
That's the way you're going to beat guys like that. So, you know, for Vass and Pricey, it's about the second and third saves and their ability to always be in the right position.
You know, those kind of goals have a lot of different names in hockey. I think sometimes chunky is one of them, right? You guys name those things a lot. After the game, if you get in a goal like that, takes a couple bounces, you know you beat a great goaltender, but maybe you got lucky. Do you talk about it afterwards with your teammates? Do you make fun of the fact that you had to get lucky to get one past him?
Listen, you got to be in the right place at the right time, but you have to also know how to create opportunities. Think about all the opportunities that are lost from guys that don't shoot the puck, right? So as a defenseman, especially if you're Montreal, you know you're playing against a championship team. They also have a championship goaltender in net, so you can't waste an opportunity. Everything that you have has to go to the net. And if you're the Montreal Canadiens, don't be cute. You don't need to be cute against Tampa. You're cute. You feed their offense. You turn pucks over, you're feeding their offense. Keep the game simple. Get pucks to the net. I think that's how you're going to have success against Tampa. I think for Montreal, they have players that can do that, but you can't afford to turn the puck over against Tampa Bay. They have too many weapons. So Ben Chiarot shooting that puck, yeah, it ricochets off a couple guys, but that's the way you're going to have to get goals sometimes in this league, especially in the playoffs against a team like Tampa.
You talk about Montreal not getting too fancy with it. Coming into this series, we talked a lot about their defense. They've been excellent defending the rush, but in game one, they gave up two Tampa goals off the rush after allowing just one in the whole series against Vegas. What can the Habs do to hold off the Lightning offensive firepower that we saw in game one?
I think that this has been the first huge challenge for Montreal, and this is a really good team. I think when you look back, let's go back to the playoffs for a second. The first round, they had a team in Toronto that had the ability to score goals, right? Very similar to Tampa, but throughout their lineup, maybe didn't have the same depth, experience, and winning pedigree that Tampa has. So Montreal continued to stick to their plan, being down 3-1 in the series, coming back and winning it. So Montreal has the character. They play Winnipeg in the second round. They wash them 4 straight. Winnipeg, a little bit banged up. They lose Scheifele. They're a little bit thin on defense. So they walk through that series. You know, not much adversity there. They get to the third round. They really only had a lot of adversity in the first round. The last two rounds for them, I haven't seen those teams really play at the level that Tampa's playing at. You know, Vegas definitely had the potential, but just never got there. So I think for Montreal, they're finally playing a team that has the same competitive nature as they do, you know, has winning pedigree, has the skill, talent, goaltending, defense, coaching. So this is the toughest challenge. And I think that for Montreal, maybe some of their youth, this is going to be learning for them. They're going to get a ton of experience from this, but we got to see. You're in the Stanley Cup Finals. You're trying to win. I think it's going to be a tough series for them. I really do. It's going to be tough. Tampa looks really good right now.
Yeah, when it's been 28 years, I don't know if you're willing to accept just getting some experience in the Stanley Cup final. I think you're ready. You're ready to get a lot more and bring some hardware back to Montreal. Let's talk about the Lightning. They are healthy at the right time, right? They get back veterans Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov. Huge benefit. Kucherov, in particular, has been fantastic in the playoffs. 2 goals in game one, 29 points in 19 games.
Sergachev across the Montreal line, sweeps to Kucherov right circle. A little centering feed, loose in front. Score! Pull off!
As a defenseman, you're looking at these two guys. How do you stop them?
Well, you don't ever stop a Steven Stamkos or Nikita Kucherov. They're experienced players in the league. They've done it for so long. And every night they have guys that are trying to shut them down. I think what you try to do is limit their time and space. Don't give them the grade A looks. Let them, you know, have to have a stick or a body in front of them before they shoot the puck. I think the biggest thing is not so much on the defense, it's the five-man unit on the ice. How you play the game, how you generate offense, how you transition. Because remember, you got to play defense against Tampa. You need to play offense. You got to score goals. But if you don't play defense, it's going to be a long night and a long series for you. So for Montreal, yes, they got to generate offense. They got to create. But if you noticed in game one, watching game one, their D weren't as aggressive on the walls. Their D weren't pinching down at the blue line. They wanted to make sure they were in positions to play defense. And, you know, all Tampa did was gain confidence. Now, all of a sudden, they're coming out of their zone. And, you know, for a full 60 minutes, it's very difficult to rely on your defense to shut down those guys and your goaltender to make 40 saves every game. Carey Price is great, but these guys are good, and they find ways to score. You know, I look at Palat's goal, batting the puck out of the air. Like, the talent level on this team is through the roof. So, for Montreal, they're going to have to manage their game. Really manage it well.
All right, after the break, I want to talk to you about what the series means to your old city of Montreal, also what it means to one of your old teammates, one that people might not even know about.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Okay, PK, I think most people know about the years that you spent playing in Montreal and your deep connection to that team, but we did a little research and we found out about another former team member of yours with a connection to the final. And I'm talking about a video we found on YouTube of a young PK playing on the Toronto Toros.
Trianon, pitch in a nut, and number 51, Subban, with the goal.
Alongside a young Steven Stamkos.
Toros now on the attack now, turn the head to the total, number 77, punches it in, Stamkos now punching that puck in.
How old were you guys?
Oh man, I might have been, Stamkos a year younger than me, so I might have been, I don't think I was any older than 7, I might have been 6 at that time, around 6 or 7. And, you know, myself and Steven, we've known each other for a very long time. Our parents, my dad and his dad, Chris Stamkos, know each other. So, you know, growing up, played with them on the junior Canadians when I was 9 years old as well. So got a lot of respect for Steven and his family. They're great people. Happy to see him back in the Stanley Cup final again. And more importantly, I'm happy to see him healthy. You know, he's had some bad luck, so it's great to see him back on the ice.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, but first I have to ask. I know there's a lot of margin for error when you're about 7 years old. It was a peewee team, so a lot of pucks maybe that went in directions that were unintended. But I still have to ask, if you've got a Norris Trophy winner, league's best defenseman, and you got a guy who's twice won the Rocket Richard Award for the league's top scorer, did this Toros team ever lose?
I'm not sure we did, and if we did lose... If we did lose, I'm not sure Steven and I were on the ice at the same time or were even playing in the game. So we had a really good team. And the Toronto Toros, that was fun. We played a lot of summer hockey. I enjoyed playing summer hockey as a kid. And it was always great to play with other kids that were just as good, if not better than you. So there's a lot of competition, but we had a lot of fun.
Obviously, we know Tampa won the Cup last year, but as you mentioned it, Stamkos missed essentially the entire series due to injury. How meaningful is it to see him back out there with the chance to win it and really be a part of the team as they make that run?
Yeah, I think that's important to him. You know, I look at Steven and his career and what he's been able to accomplish, and it speaks for itself. There, a handful of guys come through the league and are able to score as many goals as he has and have the success that he's had. So, you know, I think for him, being able to play now in a Stanley Cup final, you know, you want to win one, and he got one. But to be able to do it again and be a part of it definitely is a huge motivation for him. But it's a huge win for the Tampa Bay Lightning to have your captain motivated to want to do it again. And it's tough. It's tough to win two cups. But I think that Tampa's got a really good chance to do that. And with Steven Stamkos motivated, wanting to hoist that thing, knowing that he's been a part of it. But he was a huge part of when they won. You know, as their captain, as their leader off the ice, so many things go into that. To have an opportunity to play in more games as playoff run, I'm sure, is important to him.
All right, let's get back to your other team. You obviously played 7 seasons in Montreal. You have deep ties to that city. So you know as well as anyone how the culture of hockey can get in Montreal. Can you try to even explain how big of a moment this series is for Montreal right now? I don't know if Americans really fully understand what this team and getting back to the Cup final means to that city.
Yeah, it's a big deal. When you look at the Canadians for the past couple of years, it's been, I think it's been, you know, you look at during the pandemic, they finished in 24th or 23rd spot. They got into the playoffs based on a bit of a technicality with the format and how they wanted to run it. And I believe they lost in the first round. You know, the year before, I'm not sure if they made the playoffs, but it was first round out. The year before that, it was first round out. So, you know, as far as the fan base goes, understanding that every year, Montreal Canadiens fans expect you to contend for a Stanley Cup. And it is important for the city of Montreal. It's important for all the businesses in the city that have been struggling for almost 2 years now to have people being able to go and sit on patios and get back in bars and watch the game, to add that energy to the city. It just makes Montreal a great place to be now, especially coming out of the winter and the summertime. It's a great city to be in. So for people living in Montreal right now, they're having a hell of a time with the hope of being able to celebrate a Stanley Cup. And I know that being there, we had many, many runs in the playoffs, you know, going to 2 Eastern Conference finals. It pretty much every year we're in the playoffs. So, you know, I know what it's like there, and they're having fun right now.
Is it at all bittersweet for the Habs to finally make it back after that long drought without a full to the brim Bell Center, with fans enjoying the ride? I know they're trying to work to increase the occupancy, but, you know, is there a little bittersweetness to that?
It's difficult. It's difficult because you want to have fans in the building, and you're looking at on the road, and you're seeing, in the United States that, you know, it's full capacity and we're not doing that here. And it's very difficult because of the way the rules have been in Canada. You know, there's been really no exceptions to large gatherings and all these things over the past year and a half or 2 years or whatever it's been. So, you know, but you'd like to see, I mean, what would be better than seeing a Bell Center sold out and the crowd rocking? And I could tell you, they get one game like that, it would make a huge difference for that team. I remember my first experience going to the Bell Center and playing in a playoff game where it was full, and I get out on the ice, and in warm-up, they're screaming and cheering the whole time during warm-up, and, like, the pucks are, like, moving on the ice, and it's like, that's the energy. It's a really, really cool place to play, and I don't think there's ever been a game in the history of the time that I was in Montreal where I didn't have my legs at the Bell Center, and a lot of that has to do with the energy in the building. So would that make a difference for players? I'm sure it would.
I am one to know a thing or two about droughts because my baseball team had the longest in the history of sports and finally got to break it. So it hasn't been that long for Montreal, but it feels like a really long time. Last winning the Stanley Cup in 93. And that's the last time a Canadian team won the Cup. So I know this sounds crazy because they're all rivals, but at some point does the entire country of Canada want the Habs to win to take it back from the Americans, or are there just too many rivalries amongst all the Canadian teams?
Allegedly. I've heard that in the media. I've heard it in different outlets, but I can tell you this, Leaf fans do not want to see Montreal Canadiens win the cup. And, you know, I can tell you that there's no way, you know, they can try to spin a positive on it to say, oh yeah, we're happy a Canadian team won, but real fans don't want to see their rival teams hoisting the Stanley Cup. So I think that we have to be very careful and mindful of where some of these rumors are coming from about all Canadians wanting to see a Canadian team win. I think that the real Canadian fans for their teams, especially in Toronto, Vancouver, but especially Toronto, I don't see fans wanting to see Montreal Canadiens lift the Stanley Cup. I just don't see it.
I want to know what to expect from these teams in Game 2 tonight in Tampa. Because, like you said, anything goes in playoff hockey. What do you expect, though, from Game 2?
If you're Montreal, you don't want to go home down 2-0 to a team like Tampa. It's, you know, I think to be able to steal one in Tampa could change the series a little bit. But how you win is so important. I think that they're going to need some puck luck against Tampa. They're just such a good team. So, you know, I think that you're going to see Montreal really play their best game in Game 2. They're going to have to ratchet it up, and it's going to be difficult because Montreal is a team that has success on their speed. They play with a lot of speed and pace up front. Their forwards forecheck, but Tampa's got just as much, if not more. And, you know, I hadn't seen that happen to Montreal throughout the whole playoffs. I hadn't seen, you know, players being able to match their speed up front. And I think Tampa has the ability to match their speed, if not be faster than Montreal in a 60-minute game. And for Montreal, they're going to have to try to play a little bit smarter with the puck and managing it not to give Tampa any opportunities. You just can't afford to give them any rush opportunities.
A big one tonight for the Habs. Thank you, PK, for coming on. I'll be sure to look for you next time I'm outside a club wearing flip-flops.
Thanks, Sarah. And if I'm not there, I can make a call.
Perfect. Great. Good to know. Okay, up next, Dak Prescott opens up about the importance of mental health.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. For a long time, the NFL didn't seem like a place for sharing one's dark moments, admitting to struggles, asking for help. It was weak or soft to express your feelings, and the NFL was a place for toughness, a place that valued only the most extreme and stereotypical expressions of what it was to be a man. Just last year, we got a reminder that sport isn't always a welcoming place for honesty. In September, Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott first opened up about the effects of the pandemic on his mental health and the death by suicide of his older brother, Jace. The response from at least one high-profile sports media talking head was to criticize what he considered as an admission of weakness from Prescott and a lack of sympathy for his struggles. Yes, the backlash was swift, evidence of our progress on the issue, but the fact remains there is still stigma surrounding mental health. Prescott recently sat down with Sage Steele to share more.
You have talked openly about just that roller coaster ride that you were on emotionally. I mean, understandably so. With COVID, how'd you pull yourself back up?
My brother, Jace, he pulled me out of it, as a big brother does, I guess. And I was going through depression, anxiety, and as I said, I was learning like what it was and was talking to friends and like trying to figure out why I was feeling the way I was, but it was because I was isolated. It was because I wasn't being able to be around the people that I wanted to and make a daily impact or just be able to smile and ask somebody how their day was and make it better. COVID took that away from all of us. So, I mean, I wasn't sleeping. It was tough.
Did you talk to him about that?
I texted my brothers, like, man, I'm struggling with this isolation thing, right? And he writes back, I'm here for you. And then my other brother, you know what I'm saying, love you, let me know if you need me. So I was almost like, well, I don't want to put my pain and my depression and anxiety on them. And Jace, no, he was my best friend, a teddy bear. And that's exactly what he was, is he was the comforting one. Yeah, I mean, to a week later, finding that news out was, yeah, tough.
What happened to Jace?
Yeah, my brother, last year in the middle of the night, I mean, I want to say around 2 o'clock in the morning, took his life. And I mean, it just was devastating. And to wake up the next day to my dad waking me up, I just will never forget it. There's things and moments and emotions and situations in your life you'll never forget, that exact feeling. And that was one of them, being awakened by my dad with literally my support system there to help me grieve. And I realized at that moment, I mean, I told my friends and family that was around that day, is, guys, we've got to talk. We've got to talk to one another, because I didn't know he was feeling that way. I didn't know he was like that, right? And I even tried to be vulnerable to them, but that's it. It's not easy. And that's why I come out and on front of the mental awareness thing and tell people, I mean, guys, men, women, powerful, not powerful, whatever you are, we've got to talk. And it's an obligation for all of us to listen and to help.
In recent years, the league and its players have realized prioritizing mental health isn't a distraction, it's a necessity. In 2019, the NFL and NFLPA enacted a joint behavioral health agreement, expanding existing resources available to players, mandating team-specific mental health emergency action plans, and requiring all teams to retain a behavioral health team clinician. In May of this year, the league launched a series of videos in support of Mental Health Awareness Month, featuring current and former players speaking openly about mental wellness being just as important as physical greatness. These are big steps, but much more work must be done to strip away the layers of stigma and fear that can prevent open and honest discussions about mental health. So while it might sound simple when Prescott says, we've got to talk, as one of the faces of the league, his willingness to publicly discuss his battles with anxiety and depression might be just the thing that's needed to open up the lines of communication for others. You can watch Sage Steele's full interview with Dak Prescott, where they discuss the importance of mental health, his contract, and his return from injury on the debut episode of Up Close with Sage Steele, streaming now on ESPN+. I'm Sarah Spain, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.